So imagine a city that serves as the literal heartbeat of global commerce.
Right.
Like, we are talking about the busiest cargo airport in America. It's a place where billions of dollars of goods just fly out into the night sky every single evening.
Yeah, it's massive.
A total logistical powerhouse. But now I want you to imagine that this exact same city has a poverty rate that's nearly double the national
That's
average.
just wild to think about.
It really is. Like,
Yeah.
how is it mathematically possible to be that rich in global assets and yet that starved for local wealth?
Yeah, that's the big question.
So today we are going to Memphis, Tennessee, and we are taking the surface level headlines you usually hear about the city, you know, the BBQ, the blues, the crime stats,
Yeah.
and we're just completely shattering them.
We really have to, honestly, because if you only look at the headlines, you totally miss the actual machinery underneath. Memphis has this incredible cultural and economic footprint, but it is chronically misunderstood by the outside world. People tend to look at its struggles as like isolated failures rather than understanding the underlying engine that's driving them.
And taking apart that engine is exactly the mission of our deep dive today. Today is June 24, 2026, and we are unpacking a brand new, incredibly dense report called the Memphis Structural Diagnosis.
Super dense.
It was published jointly by the American newspaper and the Memphis Times. And the whole goal of this analysis is to figure out that perplexing paradox, right? Why does a city with massive world-class assets struggle so much to produce broad prosperity for the people who actually live there? And, you know, how can it break out of the cycle it's stuck in?
Well, to even begin answering that, the report establishes a crucial paradigm shift right up front.
Okay.
The authors argue forcefully that Memphis is not a morality tale. Right, like if you are looking at the city's challenges and reducing them to just bad individual choices or, you know, bad local politicians or just labeling it as crime, you are totally missing the plot.
Yeah.
Memphis is a highly complex structural system, and right now, today, that system is operating exactly the way its historical inputs programmed it to operate.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because
Yeah.
to understand any system, you first have to look at the dashboard, right?
Uh-huh.
Like, what are the gauges actually reading right now for the people living there?
Well, the baseline reality for the city's 609,647 residents is pretty stark. The poverty rate sits at 23.1%.
Wow.
Yeah. And the median household income is just $51,736.
That's low.
It is. And only 28% of adults have a bachelor's degree or higher. Plus, the median owner-occupied home value is just
And
$169,000.
these are tough numbers to hear just in a vacuum, but the report doesn't leave them in a vacuum, does it?
No, not at all.
It puts them up against peer cities across the South.
Yeah. And that comparative context is really where the structural problem reveals itself. Take Nashville, right across the state.
Right.
Nashville is a booming state capital. 48% of its adults have a bachelor's degree, and the median income is over $77,000.
A huge difference.
Right. Or look at Atlanta median income over $85,000, and a massive 62% of adults hold a bachelor's degree.
So basically, Memphis is trying to compete in the exact same 21st century, highly technical economy as Nashville and Atlanta, but it's stepping onto the field from a significantly weaker starting position. Lower tax base, lower human capital base, all while still carrying the massive, expensive public service burden of running a major central city.
Yeah, and the report calls this the capacity trap.
The capacity trap. You know, reading through the mechanics of this, an analogy popped into my head.
Oh, let's hear it.
It's like a business trying to maintain an Amazon-sized mega warehouse using the operating budget of a neighborhood lemonade stand. Like,
Yes.
the math just structurally doesn't work.
It doesn't. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, that lemonade stand budget creates a vicious self-feeding loop.
How so?
Let's trace the mechanics of that loop. Historical disadvantage lowers overall household wealth. Low household wealth means people can't buy expensive homes, so property values stay low.
Right, makes sense.
Now, local governments are funded primarily by property taxes, so low property values starve the municipal tax base.
Okay.
When the tax base is starved, the city fundamentally lacks public capacity, meaning they mathematically cannot afford to adequately fund schools, transit, infrastructure, or, you know, public safety.
Which means the services degrade.
Right. And because those public services are visibly struggling, it actively discourages new high-wage businesses from moving in, and it pushes the existing middle class to move away to the suburbs.
Oh, God.
Which, of course, further starves the tax base. The cycle just eats its own tail.
Okay, let me stop you there and play devil's advocate for a second, because a really obvious question comes up when you hear that. How did Memphis end up with a lemonade stand budget in the first place? Like, other southern cities like Charlotte and Atlanta also had Jim Crow.
Right.
They did. They also had deep, violent histories of segregation. So why did Memphis specifically stall out and get caught in this capacity trap while Atlanta became a corporate titan and Charlotte became a massive financial hub?
Well, it really comes down to the geography of the economy.
Geography.
Yeah. Memphis sits right on the edge of the Mississippi Delta. Historically, the Delta economy wasn't just agricultural. It was built on king cotton, enslaved labor, and later sharecropping.
Okay.
The mechanism of that specific economy is vital to understand. It was a regional system literally designed to extract value upward. Black labor generated immense wealth, but that wealth went entirely to a very small planter and commercial elite.
So the people doing the actual work were legally and systemically barred from accumulating property, getting an education, or building any generational wealth of their own.
Exactly. And compare that to a corporate hub. A corporate headquarters needs a massive middle class, managers, accountants, clerks, which generates a broad tax base.
Right. People buying houses and spending money.
Yeah. Sharecropping does not do that. So while Atlanta was building an accumulative corporate economy, Memphis functioned as the commercial processing node for a low-wage, highly extractive agricultural system.
Wow.
It absorbed the rural poverty of the Delta without ever getting the public investment needed to transform that population into a mobile middle class.
So it's a completely different foundational DNA.
It is. And then, you know, you have to layer on top of that what the report calls spatial shocks.
Spatial shocks.
Yeah, moments where policy physically reshaped the city to trap that wealth. The first major shock was the Homeowners Loan Corporation, or HOLC, redlining maps from the 1930s.
Redlining maps.
Exactly. Memphis currently has a black population of about 63%. In the 1930s, the federal government drew literal red lines on maps around black neighborhoods, explicitly blocking the people living there from accessing fair mortgage credit.
Which we know is devastating because home ownership is the primary engine of wealth building in America.
Absolutely.
If you legally lock 60% of your population out of building home equity for decades, you aren't just hurting them in the 1930s. Mm-hmm. You're actively starving the city's tax base in the 1980s, the 1990s, and today.
Yep. And that leads right into the second massive spatial shock. When you look at the historical data from the Museum of Science and History in Memphis, you see something fascinating happen.
What's that?
From the 1950s through the 1970s, Memphis aggressively annexed surrounding land. The geographic footprint of the city exploded.
Wait, slow down. If the footprint of the city exploded, wouldn't that mean they acquired more tax revenue? Why didn't that fix the problem?
Because of who was moving into that new footprint, and more importantly, who was moving out. This was the era of white flight. The city was rapidly expanding its borders, taking on all the permanent structural costs of a larger geography, more miles of roads to pave, thousands of miles of new sewer pipes to maintain, a massively wider area for police and fire departments to cover.
Right.
But the dense, high-value tax base was fleeing to independent suburbs.
So they expanded the warehouse, but they lost the high-value inventory.
Yes, perfect analogy.
They inherited all the physical infrastructure costs of suburban sprawl without the high-income tax base that usually pays to maintain it.
Exactly. And when a city's tax base is starved while its physical obligations multiply, the first thing to crack is the infrastructure supporting the next generation.
To kids.
Yeah. This sprawling, starved system has a direct, devastating impact on the city's most vital resource, its children.
And that brings us right to the human capital pipeline. Because the educational data in this report is intense.
It really is. The report analyzes data from what's called Reimagining 901, which is the massive district-wide strategic restructuring plan for Memphis Shelby County Schools.
Okay.
And within that data, there is a glaring paradox. On one hand, the 2024 high school graduation rate hit 83.4%.
Which sounds great on paper.
Right. But when you look at the foundational metrics for the younger kids, it's a completely different story. For third to fifth graders, English language arts proficiency was only 26.7%.
Oh, wow.
And math proficiency was just 23.7%. 0.9%.
That is a staggering disconnect.
Whoa.
Over 80% are graduating, but barely a quarter of the young kids are proficient in reading.
Yeah.
And you look at those numbers, and the immediate, almost biological reflex for a lot of people is to just yell about failing schools or bad teachers.
Sure, that's the easy answer.
But the report argues that treating this purely as a school governance problem is completely missing the underlying mechanics. I mean, it's like being shocked a marathon runner is losing a race when they were forced to start 3 miles behind everyone else running in work boots.
Exactly. Or like trying to build the roof of a house when the foundation is actively sinking into a swamp.
The teachers are the roof builders, but the foundation is missing. Because education in Memphis is a full pipeline issue that starts the moment a child is born.
Right.
You have to remember the environment we just laid out.
Yeah.
A city with a 23% poverty rate, a legacy of redlining, and weak neighborhood infrastructure. By the time many children arrive at their very first day of kindergarten, they are already carrying the cognitive and physiological weight of concentrated poverty.
Right. Like, the school didn't create the housing instability. The school didn't cause the eviction that forced a kid to move 3 times in 1 year.
Precisely. And there's a biological mechanism at play here. Toxic stress and trauma actively rewire a developing brain, making it incredibly difficult to focus, regulate emotions, or retain information like phonics.
Yeah, it's practically impossible.
So you cannot fix Memphis schools by only looking at what happens inside the classroom between 8 a.m. and 3 p.m. The report stresses that educational reform requires universal literacy intervention, absolutely. But it also requires deep mental health support, housing navigators to stop evictions, and family stabilization policies.
Because if the foundation is sinking, no amount of brilliant roof building is going to keep the house standing.
Exactly.
So let's follow this pipeline. Let's say a student navigates this incredibly difficult system and they graduate. Maybe they don't have the high-level academic skills required for the modern tech or knowledge economy. What jobs are waiting for them? Enter the global logistics machine.
Yes. Memphis's industrial structure is entirely dominated by its logistics position. As you mentioned earlier, it is globally significant.
And this is where I really want to push back on the report's pessimism.
Okay, let's hear it.
The report notes that Memphis has the FedEx World Hub. It's got the interstates, the river, the rail lines. There are 91,600 logistics and transport jobs in the area. How is having a massive, globally dominant economic engine right in your backyard not a huge win that pulls people out of poverty?
Well, what's fascinating here is what the report calls the logistics paradox.
The logistics paradox.
Yeah. The key mechanism to understand here is that sheer scale does not equal broad prosperity. Yes, there are tens of thousands of jobs. But warehouse and package handling work relies heavily on human manual labor.
Right.
It features extreme physical strain, brutal night shifts, and most importantly, a very firm ceiling on wage progression. You can only lift boxes so fast.
So the dominance of this one specific type of industry suppresses wage competition across the whole city.
Exactly.
And the numbers back that up, right?
Yeah.
The report cites the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Yeah. The average hourly wage in the Memphis metropolitan area is $27.96. The national average is $32.66. That $5 gap is the capacity trap functioning in real time.
Yeah. A job base heavily skewed toward entry-level physical logistics creates an artificially low wage floor for the entire region. It doesn't generate the household wealth needed to lift the property tax base.
So what do they do?
Well, importantly, the report's solution isn't to abandon logistics. Memphis shouldn't try to stop being a logistics hub. Instead, it needs to build what they call a ladder of logistics upgrading.
Meaning what, practically?
Meaning moving the human workforce up the value chain. Instead of relying on local workers to physically lift and sort the packages, Memphis needs to transition those workers into the technology surrounding the packages.
Oh, like the tech side of it.
Exactly. AI routing automation, robotics maintenance, cold chain logistics for the biomedical industry, and software development for global supply chains. It's about moving from low-wage physical exertion to high-value technical skills. And crucially, it requires local ownership of those supply chain companies rather than all the profits flowing to out-of-state shareholders.
Okay, so let's summarize the diagnostic blender we built so far. We've got an artificially low-wage floor. We've got a human capital pipeline weighed down by childhood trauma and poverty.
Oof.
And we have a historical legacy of systemic disenfranchisement.
Yeah, it's a lot.
When you put all those structural ingredients together, the inevitable mathematical output is instability. And the most visible symptom of that instability is crime.
Crime is undeniably the issue that dominates the national headlines about Memphis. And the authors are very clear that the severity of the crime cannot be minimized.
Of course.
It actively damages public trust and physically drives away the business investment the city desperately needs.
But the data in the report has a really surprising twist. According to the Memphis Shelby Crime Commission, major violent crime in the county actually dropped 27.6% in 2025 compared to 2024. Murders were down. Overall, crime was down significantly.
Which is a remarkable improvement, but the authors caution that a one-year drop doesn't solve the structural equation, because crime is a symptom, not the root cause.
Right.
You can punish crime all you want, but you will never achieve sustainable public safety if you do not address the systemic conditions producing the violence in the first place. You have to treat the disease, not just suppress the cough.
So how did they treat the disease? The report lays out a triad approach, right?
Yes. First, precision enforcement focusing police resources intensely on the very small, specific percentage of individuals who are repeat violent shooters, rather than doing broad, low-level sweeps of entire neighborhoods.
Okay.
Second, deep investments in violence prevention using credible messengers, youth employment, and mental health crisis response. And third, a strict commitment to constitutional policing.
Let's define that, because that term gets thrown around a lot. Why is constitutional policing practically necessary for stopping crime?
Because of how it impacts community trust. Aggressive enforcement that violates civil rights or alienates innocent residents destroys police legitimacy. And the mechanism here is simple. When the police lose legitimacy, witnesses stop cooperating.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
When witnesses stop talking, case clearance rates plummet. Shooters don't get caught. Retaliation happens and violence actually goes up. You need enforcement that is precise, accountable, and legally sound to maintain the community trust required to actually solve crimes.
Now, speaking of systems that alienate residents, there is another massive structural barrier highlighted in the report.
Mm-hmm.
The Memphis Area Transit Authority, or MATA.
Yes, transit.
The report cites a project called Transit Vision Memphis, which found that simply redesigning the current bus network could make 39% more jobs reachable within an hour for the average resident. 39%. If redesigning a map is that effective, why on earth isn't it happening?
Again, we return to the capacity trap. MATA suffers from chronic, debilitating funding instability. Remember that massive 1950s geographic sprawl we talked about?
Yeah, the exploding footprint.
Memphis is incredibly spread out. In a city where a huge portion of population doesn't have reliable access to a personal car, a bad bus system isn't just an inconvenience, it is a literal wall.
Right. If you don't have a car and a new high-tech logistics job opens up, but the bus takes 2 hours and three transfers to get to that warehouse district, that job basically doesn't exist for you. You are walled off from the labor market.
Exactly. Transit is the physical bridge between the human capital pipeline and the economic engine. If the bridge is broken, the whole system stalls.
So what does this all mean? We've looked at the dashboard. We've traced the history from the extractive Delta economy to the redline neighborhoods. We've diagnosed the sprawling geography debt, the struggling education pipeline, the low-wage logistics trap, and the symptoms of crime and broken transit.
It's a lot to take in.
It is a heavy, heavy diagnosis. But the report isn't an autopsy. It has a prescription. How does a city orchestrate an actual turnaround against all of this?
The authors outline what they call a 20-year development flywheel.
A flywheel, meaning a system where early efforts are incredibly difficult, but they build momentum over time until the system powers itself.
Exactly. They are very clear that this cannot be solved by catchy mayoral slogans or by handing out tax abatements to build yet another low-wage warehouse.
Right.
It requires a long-term coordinated compact. It includes an early literacy guarantee. It requires dedicating a predictable, permanent funding stream to transit so people can actually get to work. And it includes creating a well-funded land bank.
Let's explain what a land bank actually does, because that sounds like a zoning technicality, but it's huge.
It is a critical tool. A land bank is essentially a public or nonprofit entity that steps in to take over legally complicated, abandoned, or blighted properties.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, they clear all the legal garbage and tax liens, and then they bundle those properties and sell them back to local developers or residents to build affordable housing. It physically repairs the broken neighborhood infrastructure.
But inside this flywheel is what I thought was the absolute boldest stance of the entire report. They argue that any serious strategy for Memphis must explicitly focus on building a black middle class. Full stop.
It is the core imperative of the entire diagnosis. You have to look at the math. the city's population is nearly 63% Black. Because the historical extraction of wealth from sharecropping to redlining was so explicitly racialized, the solution cannot be colorblind.
The report argues that race-neutral strategies that ignore the historical asset gap aren't actually neutral at all. They just maintain the broken status quo.
Precisely. Yeah. If you just implement broad, quote-unquote, growth policies, like building shiny new downtown developments, without addressing who actually owns the businesses, who is getting the high-wage tech jobs, and who is accessing mortgage credit, you will just replicate the exact same existing inequalities.
Yeah, nothing changes.
Building a Black middle class through targeted homeownership support, small business capital, and technical career pipelines is the only mathematical way to fundamentally lift the city's tax base and break the capacity trap. You cannot thrive if 60% of your population is structurally sidelined.
It's a total reframing of what the city is supposed to do. Memphis has to pivot from its century-old mindset of merely moving goods and caring for institutions to actively converting those massive global logistics assets into local household wealth and neighborhood ownership.
It requires aligning money, political power, and philanthropic focus around those specific leverage points for an entire generation, not just an election cycle.
It really is a masterclass in what economists call path dependence. The idea that the decisions made decades ago severely limit the options available to you today.
Absolutely.
The challenges Memphis faces right now, the poverty, the crime, the sprawling infrastructure, they aren't accidents. They are the logical mathematical outputs of a historical system operating exactly as it was designed to.
Yeah.
But the inspiring takeaway from this report is that the system isn't magic. Because it was built by people, it can be rewired by people.
Exactly. If the city finally acknowledges the actual blueprint of the trap, they can start building the ladder out of it.
And that brings us to our final thought for today. As you go about your day, I want you to think about your own city or your hometown. Think about the neighborhoods that always seem to struggle with crime or failing schools or low wages. Ask yourself, are you viewing those neighborhoods as isolated failures of character? Do you just blame bad local governance? Or if you zoomed out like we did with Memphis today, would you see the invisible architecture of a capacity trap? Would you see a system operating exactly as it was designed to decades ago? Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the structures around you, and we'll see you next time.